Damage real quick.
Welcome to the SDF conferencing system. There are three other parties in this conference.
We'll pick up the countdown shortly here, and each minus 10 seconds,
they have the
countdown will come directly from the timing and firing trigger.
10 word, right?
9,
ah, oh,
8,
like Brun-
7,
six, some,
5,
you know, some Islamic
4,
country. No, no,
3,
some,
2,
some,
1, 0.
Hotel, opt-in, opt-in.
Islamic country.
This is Publius, bringing you
it sounds like that.
A step farther out. Your weekly radio message from
actually,
the
actually,
Man and Atom Society.
It really means, Republic, yeah.
Republic, okay. Cool.
Now, there are, hello, other party?
Yeah, somebody.
Hello?
Actually, now that, now SDF, sorry, Open VoIP is finished. So, there.
Yeah.
What's the next show? What's the next show? So, now they're streaming that show. Hold on. I'm on radio, so what's today after that?
Yeah, Publius.
A step further out with Publius. Oh, it's Publius show. Yeah, I can hear Publius. Publius is very intelligent. He's very smart. He's a very intelligent guy. It's amazing how all this information he brings. So he knows everything. He knows a lot of things, like, including like languages, like history, all those things. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So,
I agree.
Anyway, it was nice talking to you. So maybe next Open VoIP we talk again.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because I don't really use Open VoIP that much. So Linphone, I couldn't find my keypad on, so I couldn't do a three-way conference.
Oh, by the way, I've read about the keypad thing on COM. The keypad on my application is on left bottom. When I click it. The numbers show up.
Is it Linphone? Are you using Linphone?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
There are four other parties in this conference.
When I ask... I want to learn how to, like, add a new call on Linphone. Like, right now we're talking, right? So I want to add another line.
Person. No, line. Okay.
Or another person. Yeah, like so. There's a telephone, like there's a telephone thing with a plus sign. I guess that's what it is, right?
I don't see. Yeah, there's a There's a telephone and plus line, a plus sign.
Yeah.
And it redirects to the keypad. I suppose it adds someone.
Yeah.
I hate to be rude, but this is supposed to be my show now.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The way it's set up, it uses the voice conference bridge from 19 to
1930. I'm so sorry. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, we have to go. Bye. Right. Sorry.
Bye.
Sorry, Publius.
Sorry. Bye.
Okay. So yes, this is now a step farther out. And what are we talking about this week on A Step Farther Out? Well, of course, I have a couple of themes. So, last week, I introduced the saying, grid is good. Not greed, grid. Why is grid good? Well, I keep harping on this idea that we need solutions that will work for the world we're actually in. A world with 7.5 heading toward 10 billion people. A world in which most people don't have anything resembling the standard of living that we here in the United States, speaking for myself, or Canada, speaking for Snowdusk, who was just on, or really even the, you know, more urbanized parts of Turkey or so on, enjoy. But they want it. They expect it. They are willing to do all kinds of things to get it. As I've said, whenever I hear people talking about climate protection, you know, that, well, we've got to do this to avoid climate change. Well, you look at Delhi in India, where the air quality is chokingly bad most of the time because of the burning of fossil fuels and biofuels. And you realize when something is an imminent threat to their life and health, people aren't willing to stop doing it. So why would they stop doing it for something as abstract as, well, there might be more tropical cyclones, sea levels might rise and swallow Bangladesh, etc.? We have to offer an alternative which is better. I happened to be watching NOVA, PBS science program the other night. It was about cats, all kinds of cats, little cats, big cats, you name them. And a couple of things struck me with great force. One was they had a segment about the urban leopards of Bombay. Mumbai, as the new government insists on calling it, but what have you. And it wasn't so much the urban leopards that got to me. Actually, many of them, they live in the areas that's believed outside the city and infiltrate into it at night, going after prey of various kinds, livestock that are penned, you know, in people's vicinity, not really yards, but vicinity, and, you know, scavenger animals, whatever the Indian equivalent of raccoons is, all that kind of thing, probably little monkeys. But they have a problem with urban leopards. But what struck me, of course, was looking at all these people who are living in the city. Well, they're not really living in the city in any sense that I would be familiar with people living in the city. What they've done is they've cleared a patch of dirt on the outskirts of town and put up a shack out of odd bits of whatever they can find, corrugated iron, cement board, and so on. They've got dirt floors, they've got no running water, no sewer, no electrical connection. If they're not cooking over dung fires, it's because they're cooking over a propane stove. The government has undertaken a massive campaign to encourage people to use fossil fuels, believe it or not, encourage people to use fossil fuels in the form of bottled gas because it produces less smoke than dung and wood and so on that they've been burning. Dung and charcoal, of course, have significant environmental effects, and also the smoke has significant health effects. It'll really damage your lungs. Of the estimated something like 7 million people in the world every year who die from indoor air pollution, most of them are, or the effects of indoor air pollution, really, it's mostly chronic illnesses brought on or aggravated by indoor air pollution. It's mostly women and children in areas where cooking over dung and charcoal fires is common. So these folks' lives, I mean, these folks are living a kind of an off-grid life, but it's pretty bad. They would be a lot better off on grids. And what's more, the environment would be a lot better off if they were on grids. Why? Because grids are an amazing method of conserving resources. I know it may seem a little strange, right? That's not what you're accustomed to hearing, but it's true. The reason why we have grids is that they're an amazing means of conserving resources. It's really quite efficient. For reasons that I've stated before, for example, that the labor and materials required to wind a large generator are not much greater than those required to wind a small generator. That the 1 kilowatt generator, which would be run by a moped engine, a 1 megawatt generator, which would be run by a, you know, medium-sized diesel engine, a 1 gigawatt generator, which is run by a nuclear power station. There's not a step of 1,000 between the 1 kilowatt and the 1 megawatt. There's not a step of 1,000 between the 1 megawatt and the 1 gigawatt. I wouldn't even necessarily say there may be a step of 1,000 between the kilowatt and the gigawatt. So that's worth thinking about, right? That even after we account for all the wiring and piping and cabling and all of that stuff, grids are actually a very powerful means of conserving resources. And if we're going to raise people's living standards, then we've got to conserve resources. Another point, right? Will you say, well, raising people's living standards, firstly, it's a political necessity. You talk about any kind of plan that doesn't involve allowing people in India and people in other places like that, people in Africa to live like people in India, people in India to live like people in Turkey to live like people in Europe to live like people in the US, whatever. There's a certain level of economic development that people have to get to, it seems, before environmental considerations become important for them. Now, again, I keep thinking about these kinds of things. You look at a place like Bombay, or really most of the megacities of the world with relatively poor populations, and you find that very few of them have anything meaningful in the form of, let's say, fixed link transit systems. Why do I think that's important? Well, many of them have buses. Dhaka, Bangladesh is a great example of this. It's an absolute chaos of buses and mopeds and motorized rickshaws and God knows what. Many of the buses, of course, are old and in poor repair, and they get held up by traffic snarls all of the time, and so their emissions are substantial. And then you have people zipping around on mopeds and motorized rickshaws and so forth, most of which are powered by two-stroke engines. Have you ever heard of a South Asian brown cloud? From basically Kenya in East Africa, across the Indian Ocean, across the Western Pacific Ocean, out past the tip of the big archipelago, which has Indonesia and Timor and New Guinea, there's this pall of brown haze, which is produced essentially by two-stroke engine exhaust. Because in that region, there's well over a billion two-stroke engines. And they produce an enormous amount of exhaust containing all kinds of awful substances, many of which are toxic, and many of which form this brown haze, which has suppressed the evaporation of water from the surface of the equatorial Indian and Western Pacific Oceans. The fact is, you think of the evaporation of water from the ocean as a thermal process, but that's really only true at night. During the day, a major mechanism is photon momentum exchange. Literally, higher energy photons of light, say blue light, hit the surface of the water and knock loose. They contribute enough momentum to actually knock loose water molecules that are in the higher vibrational states close to evaporation. And so the South Asian brown cloud has suppressed water evaporation across a good chunk of the world's warm equatorial oceans by 50%. Of course, that creates climate change right there, doesn't it? Because it affects how much precipitation falls in South America and Australia. It affects how much cloud cover there is. Of course, cloud cover reflects the light of the sun, reducing the amount of heat that's trapped by the Earth's atmosphere, whereas the brown cloud only traps it more efficiently. That's an aspect of climate change, global climate change, caused by humans, absolutely no question about that. That has nothing to do with carbon dioxide, and very few people are talking about it. So if you ask me, if we want to introduce battery electric vehicles instead of internal combustion propelled vehicles, that would be a good area to do it. East Africa, India, Indochina, Indonesia, that whole region, Malaysia and the Philippines. Try to reduce that brown cloud. But, of course, battery electric motor vehicles will only do so much. Firstly, you have to have the power capacity to power them. And half of the reason people are using prime movers for things is they don't have electrical service that's adequate. That maybe it's not on all the time. Maybe the lines don't go out there. Those of us in wealthy countries, in fact, see this piece of stupidity all the time. You've got food trucks pulled up outside a hotel or someplace like that, and each one of them has a little engine-powered generator. Now, typically, these are four-stroke generators, but they're still burning gasoline. They're producing fumes. They're producing noise. There's no reason for this. Those food trucks all ought to be plugged into 220-volt outlets. Frankly, if I were in charge of, say, Portland, Oregon, big deal there, right? Food trucks. Okay, well, when you go down to City Hall to get your food truck license, that should include a certain charge, and that charge authorizes you to use any number of these public electricity outlets, which we're going to mount every so often, and we're going to put them up on posts in these areas where the food trucks congregate, so you can plug in your food truck. And you pay for the electricity you use when you get your food truck license. And frankly, we can make it pretty cheap because the more electricity being drawn from the grid, the less of these generators, the less air quality non-attainment, right? The less noise, the less nuisance of every kind. It seems so obvious. But of course, as I keep saying, there are a lot of non-solutions. Again, I harp on fixed link transit systems. If you really want to get rid of that South Asian brown cloud, you can't just convert everybody to electric mopeds. You're going to have to put in transit systems, fixed link transit systems. Rail transit systems are really effective. Surface rail, street railways in areas of modest population density are really effective. Areas of higher density, you've got to go elevated or underground or something. But simple street railways actually reduce congestion enormously. There's a great photograph that I saw. The Toronto Transit Commission was advertising its services. This was decades ago now, I guess, probably in the 1980s. But they had a great photograph. It was three pictures. One of them was a TTC streetcar, one of the older ones at the time. The second was all of the cars. Right, you've got a whole, so it was on a street. Second photo was the same street, and instead of one streetcar, there were cars, each one of which had one person in it, enough to hold the same number of people who were on that streetcar. And then I think there was a third panel, which was just all those people sitting on the ground in the position where the driver's seat of the car was, and you can see how far they are apart from each other. This is one of our problems. The automobile-oriented city has to be low density, because cars take up space. And when they're in motion, they take up more space because you have to leave space between them to stop them hitting each other, and because you have to have lanes that are wider than the cars and round, broad curves and so on, and you have to have buffers between the cars and the people, so you've got to have various kinds of sidewalks and curbs and plantings and parking lots and all those kinds of things. Yeah, you've got to have parking lots to store the cars in when you're not using them, which is most of the time. Meanwhile, in the old city of Munich, I've experienced this myself, there are places where you've got a street, and the streetcars, there's two streetcar tracks running down the middle of the street. The streetcars pass each other at full speed may be an exaggeration, but each one of them is going at least 20 kilometers an hour, so they pass each other at a combined 40 kilometers an hour, which is not shabby in the old city of Munich, which is a fairly dense area, right? And they're what? 30, 50 centimeters from the car going in one direction to the car going in the other, you'd be really uncomfortable if you were doing that in an automobile. In fact, you'd be liable to lose a wing mirror. But because the streetcars are on tracks, their behavior is very efficiently predetermined. Meanwhile, on the same street, there are automobiles parked on either side of the street the whole way along. So if you actually want to drive an automobile down the street, or you want to get your automobile out of the parking space where it is, you have to pull out into the wake of a passing streetcar. That's basically all you can do. Anyway, I keep talking about these solutions versus non-solutions. Battery electric cars are not much of a solution because they don't solve that bigger problem with the extreme resource cost in terms of land, in terms of concrete, etc., in terms of longer piping runs, longer wiring runs, longer cabling runs, etc., that's associated with the automobile-oriented city. The automobile-oriented city has a lot of what I would call wasted space because it's not space that anybody is enjoying. If you take Los Angeles, for example, there's huge amounts of space that at any given time nobody is using because they're in empty parking spaces. They're in lanes in the street. There's spaces between cars and the lanes in the street and so on. This is space that nobody gets any enjoyment out of. It's also space that generates no income for anyone. It's space that generates no tax revenue for the city. This is one of the things which has contributed to the decline of cities in America. And it's one of the reasons why cities in places where they're not quite so automobile happy. And to be clear, Munich is about the most automobile happy place in Germany. Bavaria is very pro-automobile, as you might have guessed from all the car companies based there. You ever heard of a thing called Bavarian Motor Works, BMW? Yeah. Mercedes-Benz? That too. Okay. Maybe I'm being a little extra sarcastic today for some reason, but I really feel that it's warranted because of what Germany did, right? A few years back, they were talking about, well, we have to address climate change. And like everybody else, they're taking measures that make no never mind, right? I see it in the newspaper every day. Biden administration proposes 30 gigawatts of offshore wind power. At the same time, it's not just me saying this. People like, you know, people at the Institute for Advanced Studies at Princeton have estimated that we have to double or maybe more than double electric production in the United States if we're going to electrify transport, building heating and cooling, all those things, and maybe repatriate some manufacturing. So we need terawatts of new electric generating capacity, 30 gigawatts of offshore wind with annual load factor of 40%, ain't gonna make the slightest bit of difference. Biden administration appoints John Kerry to serve as climate envoy to go around the world talking to everybody about how it's really important to reduce carbon emissions. And what else are they doing at the same time? You may have seen this in your newspaper the past week. Biden administration encourages OPEC to raise production targets in order to support global economic recovery. Because guess what? We need the energy services that fossil fuels provide. If we don't have some other way of providing those services, we're going to keep getting them from fossil fuels. And that is what continues to happen. I harp on this. It's true. But I harp on it because we have seen it every year since 1970. Every coal-fired power plant. You right? Any nuclear power plant of the hundreds not built in the United States and Europe that were planned but never built in the United States and Europe since the 1970s. Any one of those nuclear power plants not built has been a coal-fired power plant or a gas-fired power plant built in America or Europe, or a coal-fired power plant or an oil-fired power plant built in China. Exporting your fossil fuel consumption, as it turns out, no more improves your environmental index than exporting your fossil fuel production. People don't want fracking in their areas. Well, hell, I don't want it in my area. I don't want fracking a block away from the elementary school. I've got it anyway. I don't want that, sure, but I want nuclear electricity. That's the thing. People who say they're against fracking, people who say they're against pipelines, people who turn out to protest against these things, to demand laws against them, are just as good customers of the fossil fuel industries as everyone else is. So I harp on this. We need real solutions. Solutions that actually work. Solutions that displace fossil fuels and provide enough energy with low enough environmental costs to raise everybody's standard of living. And then what does Germany go and do? They say, well, we've got to reduce the environmental footprint of transport. Okay, so, well, battery electrics would be too hard. Apparently, the German car companies did not want to get in on the ground floor with battery electrics. They wanted somebody else to do the hard work first, forgetting that those who do the hard work generally are those who also reap the rewards in business. No, that's not an invariable rule, but first mover advantage is a very real thing. It's the only reason why Tesla is valued higher than GM on the markets, despite the fact that Tesla makes what? 1% of the number of cars that GM makes? Less than that? Think about that for a minute. So what do the Germans do? They say, well, we can't do that. We'll impose, we'll impose biofuels mandates and we'll impose strict emission standards. Well, funny thing happened with those emission standards, right? At Volkswagen, the engineers went to their management and said, we've tried it six ways from Sunday and we just can't meet the emissions targets. You could just about do it on a dynamo under special operating modes, but it would never be reflected in practical operation. And the managers came down and said, well, there's no choice. We got to meet those targets. So just cheat on the dynamometers and let them do whatever they do in traffic. Mercedes-Benz, the engineers, went to their management and said, we've tried it six ways from Sunday, and we just can't meet the emissions targets except on a dynamometer. And the executive said, well, dynamometer tests are the only tests that matter in terms of the standards, so just build it, ship it. BMW engineers went to their management and said, we can't do it. We've tried everything we can think of. BMW managers said, well, good try, guys. I guess we'll just have to miss the emissions targets. And so BMW, Mercedes, and Volkswagen automobiles were all producing the same emissions, but Volkswagen and Mercedes cheated to get theirs certified that they were lower emissions. Anyway, but the other thing was the biofuels, which, as it turns out, translated directly into one of the biggest environmental catastrophes of the past generation, plus genocide as a bonus. Yes, that's right, friends. The utter destruction of the Indonesian rainforests, the destruction of the Sumatran tiger, the rhinoceros, and the orangutan who make their home in those rainforests, the destruction of the people who live in those rainforests, if they're not being actively killed, they're at least being driven out of the habitat, their way of life is destroyed, they've got to find somewhere else to live, they cease to exist as a people, which is a definition of genocide that's often used, and probably their lives will be shortened by things ranging from disease to despair. Good job, Germany. And we haven't even got started, because as it turns out, what happens when you cut down a whole big rainforest, which is a very complex ecosystem, and plant monoculture palm oil instead? As it turns out, the soil begins to dry out, and when it begins to dry out, that's been saturated with moisture for thousands of years, you get self-igniting peat bog fires. And as it turns out, there's no way to extinguish a self-igniting peat bog fire unless perhaps the sea level rises to the point that it smothers the fire. Great job, Germany! Now, has this discouraged the Germans from pursuing further biofuel projects? Absolutely not! In Cuxhaven and Hamburg, there are proposals on the table now to turn their coal-fired power stations into environmentally friendly wood-fired power stations like Drax in the north of England, which emit just as much smoke and come with bonus deforestation. Yeah, Drax, which is burning wood pellets imported from North America, from the Pacific coast of North America in some cases, on oil-burning ships, of course, and at least in Cuxhaven, they're proposing to fire the power station with wood cut in Namibia. Brush cut in Namibia. Think about that for a minute. All of which is to say, I went downtown today to check my mailbox, and I had to drive because we have nothing resembling real public transit. And there was some kind of big event going on downtown, and so the streets were choked and the parking lots were full, and I honestly thought I wasn't going to be able to find a place to park near the post office. Fortunately, I did. But I would rather have ridden a streetcar downtown, even if it took twice as long, because it's actually easier to live that way. The so-called freedom of the automobile often turns out to be a will-o'-the-wisp. And then on my way home, I was stopped by a train. I don't mind being stopped by a train, but it was a train of wind turbine blades. I've never seen this before. 27 blades, so count three to a turbine, that's nine turbines. Not the nacelles, which actually contain the generator and so on, but just the blades. Each one of them was twice or three times as long as a locomotive, so say 40 to 50 meters. Each of those turbines, even if it was the biggest size, would be 10 megawatts. Call that 90 megawatts total generating capacity. A steam turbine of that size would have fit on one rail car. And, mind you, because there's no engine nacelles, we can compare it to just the turbine. You could also have put the condenser and auxiliaries on a second rail car, and probably the boiler on a third rail car. And that would generate roughly three times as much electricity in a year as 90 megawatts of wind machines. Anyway, in 5 seconds is the Dubious Goals Committee with Tobe.
7.